Okay, this is Daniel Thacker, a digital archivist for the South Texas Archives, and today is February 11th, 2017, and I'm sitting with Cagnes Jefferson and Rhonda Jefferson. Rhonda Jefferson is the granddaughter of William H. Jefferson, and Cagnes is the daughter of William H. Jefferson. And today's purpose, oral interview, is to talk about William H. Jefferson's life and career as a brakeman and his involvement with the Colored Trainmen of America Union and just his life and times around that subject. So we'll start off. Rhonda is the reason why we're having this oral history. Could you, and you're responsible for all this, could you tell us how this all came to be?
I work here at the library, so when I came up to the third floor to do my job, I just happened to see the display of the colored trainmen. And I was like, wow. I mean, I knew, you know, that they were there, but I was just like, wow. So when I got a little closer, I saw a picture and I recognized the picture. And then I looked a little closer and I was like, that's my granddad. And so I looked up and I saw the other picture and I was like, I think that's my Nana too. So I just kept looking. I was like, that is my granddad. And it was just so awesome to see that because, you know, at that moment, like I said, I was in a bad mood kind of, and when I saw that, all of that just went away, and I was just so excited, and I just couldn't wait to come and find out who did it. So I went to the circulation desk and they were like, the people at archives did that, and I ran up here. I even used the stairs, I didn't use the elevator, and I came up here, and they were like, no, they're not here. So I was disappointed, but then when I came back and everybody was here, and I was just really, it was exciting to see, you know, that my grandfather was a part of a history that, you know, that's displayed. So that was really cool. It was really cool.
So Cagnes, could you tell us your birth date and where you live at?
Yes, I was born on leap year day, February 29th, 1952, in Kingsville. And in our family, I was the first child born in the hospital.
No kidding.
Yeah, at the Claiborne County Hospital, because the doctors delivered babies in the homes back then, and so in our family I was the first one.
How many siblings did you have?
I'm seven, and I'm the youngest of seven.
So it was a large family. So your father had to provide for a lot.
Yeah, but there's big age gaps. My oldest sister's like 24 years older than me. The next one was 18 years older, so it was a lot of gaps.
Could you give us a little background on your mother and father?
Well, my mother was born in Milam, Texas. And I know this is kind of an aside, but it's interesting. So I've been on Ancestry.com trying to piece together information in the family. And my mother's maiden name was Warren. And she didn't know anything about her father's side of the family because when she was 4 years old, someone killed her father. And so when she would tell me the story about it, it was that there was a peeping Tom in the neighborhood, and her mother saw him looking through the window. So she told her husband, and I guess her husband, my grandfather, approached the man, and then one night on his way home from work, he was shot and killed. So she actually told us that she was born in Petronila, but when I did birth records and all that, it ended up being in Milam, Texas. So I thought, okay, so this is interesting. So I sent in my DNA to Ancestry. And the results came back, and they also would give you, well, I received an email on Ancestry from a lady from Long Beach, California, and she said, hello, you know, she introduced herself. She said, my father was a Warren from Waco, the Waco area, And according to Ancestry, we're third cousins. And I was really excited. I was like, wow, you know. And so she was asking me questions. And so how are we related? And I told her. And I said, but my mother's father was killed when she was 4. So she really didn't know a lot about the Warrens. And so she said that actually the Warrens were also related to Supreme Court Justice Warren.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. And they were Irish descent. And they still live in the Waco area.
No kidding.
And so I thought, well, hey, you know, maybe I can take a trip up there and introduce myself and get to meet some new relatives and all that. And so she said, so did your mother tell you how your grandfather was, her father was killed? And I told her the story. And she said, well, actually, your grandfather was very abusive to your grandmother. And she just couldn't take it anymore. So she shot and killed him. But she did. And I was just stunned. And I said, are you serious? I pulled up his death certificate, and it reads, he died from a gunshot wound due to a fuss.
Due to a fuss.
Yeah, that's how it stated on his death certificate. So I was just blown away. I was just like, oh my God. So, because I often wondered what brought them all the way down to South Texas. Mm-hmm. And it was just looking back, pulling up my grandmother's census and all that, I could kind of track her movements. Well, my cousin from Long Beach said that the family rarely speaks of his death. Mm-hmm. Because it was so upsetting that his brothers had threatened to kill my grandmother.
Oh.
And so she had to leave. Mm-hmm. And so she ended up staying with relatives in Corpus Christi. And I remember my mother, a lot of her childhood was around Petronila, like Bishop, that area. And then she met my father on the railroad. She was a nanny to a wealthy family in Harlingen, and they met on the train.
Okay.
Going there.
Okay.
Yeah, down there. So that's on her side. And then my father, I don't know if Rhonda had given Rhonda a chapter in a book written by this journalist and from West Palm Beach, Florida. And he talks about the development of West Palm Beach and the different communities. And so one of my father's uncles was a physician there, and he owned the pharmacy, and he was a black physician there. And there's a medical society in his name there as well. But I was trying to get more information on my great-grandfather, my father's grandfather, and Meeks is actually our family name. His name was Thomas Meeks. But somehow, he was a mulatto, and the census shows that he was a mulatto. His mother was also a mulatto from Virginia. His father was the slave owner. It looks like maybe he was from Tennessee area, but I'm not sure how they moved to Mississippi. But that's where my father was born, in Hazelhurst, Mississippi, in Copiah County. And it's about 30 miles south of Jackson.
Okay.
And kind of in between Macomb and Jackson. And so the story in this book of West Palm Beach says that my great-grandfather lived as a white man. And he was a very prominent cotton grower.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of his sons, James Andrew Jefferson, was my grandfather, my father's father, worked on the railroad. He was a fireman on the railroad at the time. He lived in Macomb because of his job, but his wife and the kids stayed out in the country on the place. I've had other people call it a plantation, but I guess back then maybe it was, but it was my great-grandfather's home that they lived in. And so in 1918, I found this in my father's apartment. But this, he attended Jackson State.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, yeah. I was going to ask what school he went to.
Yeah, college in Jackson. So, and I found this in it.
And for the record, we are looking at a picture of the Jackson State faculty, Jackson College, 1918-1919. It's just about 6 inches in height and about 2 feet long. It's a beautiful picture, and we will digitize it and we'll put it in, in your collection. This is an amazing picture. It's even got a seal over here, Daniel Jackson, Mississippi. Amazing.
Yeah.
Really is amazing.
So he dropped out.
Have you seen it, Rhonda?
I saw it.
Okay.
He left Jackson State because his best friend told him that they were the word was out that they were hiring black brakemen in Memphis and also in Texas. And so they agreed. His friend said, well, I'll go to Memphis. And my father said, okay, I'll go to Texas. And so he told me, I don't know if it would... I don't think it was downtown, but wherever he stepped off the train in Kingsville, he said he was knee-deep in sand.
Knee-deep in sand.
Yeah, yeah. Huh. And I know the town was founded in 1904.
Right.
Because the railroad came through in 1904. So I think Pancho Villa was still making raids.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a tumultuous time. A lot of was going on.
Yeah.
A lot was going on.
Yeah. And
did your father did he fear for his life at any time?
No, my father was pretty tough.
Are you okay?
He carried a pistol in his sock all the time. He had in his room a whole case full of rifles and shells. And, yeah. He was pretty. There were quite a few people. You know, I mentioned his name to people who's, you know, they recognize his name and they're just like, oh, you know, Mr. Jefferson. Like, you know, he was somebody that they kind of, you know, definitely respected, but also kind of feared. Mm. There was some fear in there too. But he was a very reserved, quiet guy at home.
He was quiet and carried a big stick.
Yeah. He did, yeah. He would come home from meetings sometimes and he would be brushing off dirt and grass where he's had a tumble with somebody, you know. But there were certainly some other brakemen who didn't care for him.
But he was a born leader, wasn't he? That's the impression that I get.
Yeah, he must have been, because he's, as far as I was told, he co-founded the...
No kidding.
Yeah, he was a co-founder, and later he was president, and then he was investigator. So he traveled all across the country listening to different grievances from brakemen and trying to represent them. And most of it, you know, had to do with pay, like sick pay and
things like that. They did a lot, just from the research that I have, you know, the strike of 1922. They did a lot, and there was another strike, I believe, in 36, where they were able to increase their pay by like 40%.
Chances are he was involved in it.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure he was instrumental in that.
Yeah. So he, I forgot what I was going to say. Okay, you can ask me another question.
Okay, sure. Yeah. What line did he work on?
It was the Missouri Pacific.
Missouri Pacific, which later became the Pacific Union?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And it was headquartered out of St. Louis.
St. Louis.
Yeah. So we did all of our traveling for a long time on a train to Chicago and just all over. My older sister would travel with him when he had to meet with, you know, conferences with the different brakemen who wanted to meet with him about their grievances, so she traveled a lot with him.
Now, I read that the brakeman was one of the more dangerous jobs on the railroad. Is that correct?
Yes, I think so. I know, you know, people were injured, and I'm sure that there were some people who were killed. He later on, and that's what kind of forced him into retirement. He didn't want to retire. He was with the railroad for like 48 years. And but he was on the caboose, and he, I guess when the train started, it knocked him off balance. And we got a call from Meg Allen that he was in the hospital there with broken ribs. And then Shelton, his oh, foot, his awesome. Injury.
Yeah, he got his heel cut off.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Got his heel cut off.
It was pretty dangerous. And, mm-hmm. and this is another story my father told me. So I was riding with him to see the doctor in Corpus at Memorial Hospital. And so I was just asking him questions. And I said, hey, Daddy, look at, weren't you, you know, the tall grass around the railroad tracks and then at being at night, and he had, you know, they switched, did the switching of the trains by the signals from the lanterns. Mm-hmm. And I said, so what about the snakes? You know, weren't you ever afraid of the snakes? And he goes, no. He said, snakes didn't hang around the railroad tracks. And I said, really, why? And he says, because the vibration of the train coming on the tracks would jar their eardrums. And I was like, oh. And my sister said, they don't have ears. But he was my father, and so I just believed everything he said.
Well, but that is true. I don't know too much about snakes, but they're highly sensitive.
Yeah.
They have other sense organs that and they do the vibration.
Yes, so it was just, you know, from the feeling of the vibration.
Sure.
Not that, you know, the noise.
I didn't even catch that. I wouldn't even catch that. I would have took that as gospel, and I would have gone on.
And I was like, really? He goes, oh yeah. And I was telling the story to one of my older sisters, and she started laughing. She says, think about it. They don't have ears.
I guess they don't.
So he liked to tell jokes and everything. But he was pretty strict with us. And when you think about it, he was born January 1900. And so it was very Victorian back then.
Right.
So, you know, so we were kind of raised that way. And so he was pretty strict on us.
And the home was in Kingsville, correct?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes, on Raglan Street.
On
419 West Raglan. Okay. And so when... So there was always this rumor as to why black brakemen were hired in Kingsville. And the rumor was that Mrs. King said that in order for the train to come through as well, you know, she wanted black men to be hired as brakemen. So I talked to a gentleman from the King Ranch, and I said, so I understand it's a rumor. And he said, no, it's not a rumor. He said Mrs. King felt sorry for the black men who worked on the train traveling from Corpus to Brownsville because there was no place for them to spend the night or sleep overnight. So she gave the original town site in Kingsville only extended to Fordyce Street. And so the rest of the area, like where we grew up and lived, the ranch donated part of that land for the black community. And so then you had this, because of the pay was really well, you know, good for them. So you had this instant middle class black community that sprang up.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, was that called the quarters? Did they refer to that as the quarters?
I never heard it referred
okay.
to it. Maybe early on.
Okay.
I wouldn't be surprised if they did, because I know in Mississippi every summer we go to Mississippi to visit cousins and spend time with them, and in Hazelhurst, the black communities split up into quarters, like the Tanner quarters. So all the Tanner family members live there.
Okay.
Or Bird Town, and all the Bird family members live there, and so I think it wouldn't surprise me because that goes back to slavery. Referring to different sections where the slaves lived.
Okay.
His quarters.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, was there white brakemen and black mm-hmm. brakemen? They were both, okay. Mm-hmm. Do you know if there was a pay differential? Was that talked about?
No.
Okay.
I don't know. But I would imagine there would have been.
I would have thought so. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I would imagine.
Now, what was your mother part of the Women's Auxiliary, the Missouri Pacific Women's Auxiliary, with that one picture that we saw on the display?
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Yes.
And what did they do? What was that organization for?
When I came along, and that picture, it looks like it, I don't know when it was taken, but I didn't really know.
Okay.
By the time I came along, I didn't know. And there was no mention of it. As I said, she was a member of the Eastern Star, and so I do remember her.
And the Eastern Star is?
It's sort of like a black sorority.
Okay.
But it's nationwide, and it's similar. It's the female opposite of the Masons.
Okay.
They have secret rituals that they do, and when they die, when my mother died, the Eastern Stars, there was a certain ritual they performed at the funeral. And the same thing with the Masons when my father died.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Now, there was a school, elementary school, Douglas Elementary School, on what was 2nd Street and now Martin Luther King Street and Raglan and Warren. The campus there. After elementary school, there was no high school for the black students to go to in Kingsville. Mm-hmm. So they either had to attend high school at Solomon Cole High School in Corpus Christi, or they were sent to St. Philip's College in San Antonio. Okay. So my sister was sent to San Antonio.
Wow, that's quite a travel. She had to live there and be away from the
16
family.
16 years old, yeah. So she was a lot younger than the other students. And every now and then, my mother would say she would get into trouble. So to keep from my father hearing about it, my mother would quietly get on the train and travel to San Antonio and take her out of school and put her in another school.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did you ever go to any of the meetings, to the Color Treatment of America meetings?
No,
it was...
Yeah, it was strictly, strictly for the men folk.
Okay.
Yeah,
I didn't
for the
know.
Members. But my father, part of my designated duties was to pay his dues, his membership dues.
Yeah.
He would tell me, you need to go to Mrs. Wright's house and pay my dues for me, so I would walk there and do that. And I did that for a long time.
Did the husbands and wives of the union, did they get together? Did they, did they have parties?
Yeah, not so much when I was growing up. But I would imagine early on they did, because it was quite a few. If you think about it, it's like 8 streets that was like packed with, all these people. There was a lot of activity, there was a hotel there, there was a taxi service, there was an ice cream parlor, there was a barbecue restaurant, there were about 5 or 6 churches, 4 or 5 bars, nightclubs. it was a thriving community.
Yeah.
It's so depressing now to drive through there and mm-hmm. see the way that I remember that it used to be, and now it's just deteriorating.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And the Methodist Church, that Scott's Chapel Methodist Church that my father attended, my mother was Pentecostal, so their agreement was that we would attend, when we were small, attend Sunday school at my father's church, and then go to church at my mother's church, and then that was an all day, all evening thing. And my father would give my sister and I an offering money to put into the offering plate at Sunday school, and it was on his trunk, on top of his trunk, where he had all these pictures. He would have a nickel and a penny there.
Yeah.
And we had our handkerchief, and he would say, "Give me your handkerchief." And in a corner, he'd tie the money in the corner of the handkerchief. And he says, "Now, when they pass the plate, you put the penny in and you keep the nickel." And my mother would have a fit. She would stop telling him that. And he would laugh, you know, because there were a couple of grocery stores, and the closest, and there was one just like catty corner from the church, Scott's Chapel. And he would tell us, you know, use that nickel to, you know, buy candy or whatever at the store. So that's what we do. Yeah.
Great day.
Yeah.
So did the union, so if a man got hurt and couldn't work anymore, would the union take care of him? How would that work? I'm just curious.
Yeah, and I have no
idea. Okay, that's okay.
Yeah.
That's okay.
I have no idea.
That's okay.
But it seems like they really looked after each other.
That's what I would assume.
Yeah. From, you know, just, yeah, it, no matter where the brakeman worked, you know, the other black brakeman worked in Victoria, Houston, or whatever. Also, one of my father's uncles was a brakeman in Houston.
What was his name?
His name was Mike Jefferson, but his first name wasn't Michael. It was Idale, and I guess Mike or Michael was his middle name. They called him Uncle Mike the time, but he lived in Houston, so he worked on the railroad as well. And I think my father stayed with him when he left Mississippi just for a brief time before he came to Kingsville. Yeah.
So I guess the Colored Trainmen of America disbanded around 1969. Do you remember what your father's thoughts was on that?
I just, because he had retired, and he was still upset about that because he wanted to continue to work. But so when the passenger trains stopped coming through, mm-hmm. Kingsville, just the freight trains, I think he was, like I said, he was pretty reserved, and so if you ask him questions, he would answer them, but he never really would just come out and discuss things.
Okay.
But I would always ask him questions.
Like, yeah. What kind of questions would you ask him?
Well, you know, about the snakes.
Yeah.
But his life in Mississippi growing up, we made a trip. Every year we would go to get to know our cousins. You know, so some of his siblings, we'd all meet up in Hazelhurst. And so one of his sisters lived out in the country, and next door to her home was a church. And every, I think it was monthly, they would have a big picnic in the churchyard, and they called it Big Day. And so all the members bought food, you know, this table that was laid out. And so my father said, you know, I'm going to walk over and say hello to people. And he stayed gone for a long time. It was close to the evening before he came back. And so we were wondering, well, what happened? You know, where were you? And he said, well, you know, he said, I went to the church and I ran into his best friend, and the one that had told him about the brakeman being hired in Memphis and Texas. And he said, and we were talking and talking, and then he invited me home with him so they could continue to talk. And he says, you know, that rascal never went to Memphis. He stayed and married my girlfriend. So they're sitting there chatting, and his old girlfriend comes out to serve them tea or whatever. And it was his girlfriend.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
He sent him away so he could get the girl. So
he sent him away, like far.
Mm-hmm. It was so wrong.
But he chuckled. I mean, he thought that was so funny. Really funny. But yeah, I just, you know, now that this is all coming up, I wish I had asked him more questions about, but I just remember because of segregation, when I was born in Kingsville, it was the tail end of segregation. So, like I said, there was one hotel in the community, but usually the men who would come in to visit with my father, to talk with him about their grievances, would spend the night at our house. Mm-hmm. And I just remember, you know, at different times, you know, these men coming in and us making room for them to sleep and helping my mother, you know, set in the table and, you know, putting the food out for them and all that. But then we would leave, and at the dining room table, he would have his meeting with the men. So we really weren't privy to.
But who would he talk to about the men's grievances?
After they filed their grievance?
Uh-huh.
I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was just trying to... Yeah. Someone in the Missouri Pacific. Mm-hmm. Okay. I was just wondering how...
Because I know he traveled to St. Louis quite a bit, and since that was the Missouri Pacific headquarters, you know, maybe that was for meetings to discuss their grievances.
Do you remember how much he got paid, you know, just to get an idea of the time, the salary?
No. He was so tight with his money that for us it was like he didn't get paid that well. But I think it was, again, the way he was raised.
Sure.
You know, and it was because he came from a prominent family in Mississippi. His family hired teachers to come to their home and teach the children the way that his grandfather had, the same thing, teachers hired teachers to come in and teach. And I asked one of my sisters about that, and I said, well, why didn't they go to public school with the other black children? And she said because the family was afraid that the Klan would bother the children if, you know, on their way to school. And so to protect them, we just thought it was best to hang out there. But still, the respect for my great-grandfather, or his grandfather, I think part of it, he changed the name, I told you, from Meeks to Jefferson because it was some rumor that he was related to President Thomas Jefferson, possibly one of Sally Hemings' offspring, somewhat relations. And so he changed the family name to Jefferson. And I just remember my mother speaking about how respected the white, he was well respected in the white community in Mississippi, which is...
That's a big deal.
Yeah, it's a big deal. When he died, his funeral was held at the white church, and he's probably buried in the white cemetery.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, but he married a black woman.
Uh-huh.
And so my father just made sure that we had, like, the basics, but it was always, like, the best quality of things that would last us a long time. And the same thing with everything we wore. You know, we'd go to him and say, you know, eventually he would give us a quarter as an allowance.
Uh-huh.
I think it was every week. And he put it on top of his trunk, and he would, you know, so we knew to go and get it. And so one day I went to him and I said, you know, Danny, I think we need a raise.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, a raise? What do you mean you need a raise? And so one day we went to get our quarter and there was an extra quarter. It went up to 50 cents, you know. So we had 50 cents, but...
He heard your grievance.
Yeah. But, you know, we shopped at the best stores. He... You know, Raglan's, where the saddle shop is right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. My older sister had a credit card there.
Oh, wow.
Back then, and that was back in the, you know, 30s or whatever. But he just always made it a point that, you know, the quality was, you know, he said, all you need are just the basic things, you know, and if mm-hmm. the quality's good, it's going to last you, and so it's worth the money. But as far as his pay, I would think that his pay was pretty good because I would think, I don't know how the unions work, but.
I don't either. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know enough.
Paid through them as well, but yeah.
How was your house compared to other people's houses?
It was, again, it was, you know, about the same as
about
everyone's
same.
House. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Okay.
And he was just very low-key. Mm-hmm. At his funeral, the minister who gave the eulogy, Reverend Alexander from Corpus mm-hmm. Christi, he told the story where he had a minister's conference in Dallas. And he told the church members, he said, well, I'll be gone for a week to Dallas to this church conference. And so after church was over with, my father waited for him outside the church and kind of pulled him to the side. And he handed him some money and said, look, when you go to this meeting, I don't want you eating hamburgers or hot dogs or whatever. You get a steak to eat. So this is, you know. To help pay for that steak or
right.
whatever. And that's the type of person, that's how he was. Yeah. And he never, like I said, with awards and things, and I'm sure he received things, but he just never displayed them or talked about them or anything like that.
Interesting man.
Yeah.
Really
yeah.
interesting man.
Yeah, and it's just too bad that I didn't. I wouldn't say appreciate that, but I just, for lack of knowledge, I just
sure.
had no idea how respected he was. And about 5 years ago or 6 years, one of my cousins died in Hazelhurst. And so one of my aunts, who was my cousin who died, his mother, was married to one of my uncles, Sam Jefferson, who lived in Kingsville. He worked on the railroad. And so Sam Jr. is the one who died. So his mother's sister lived in Harlingen for years and later moved to Houston. And I called to see if any of them were going driving to Hazelhurst to the funeral. And they said yes, that I was welcome to ride with them. So for the first time I met her, and her husband, who was also a brakeman, retired brakeman on the railroad, and he said, okay, so what Jefferson are you? And I said, William Jefferson. He said, oh, he goes, he was a pretty important guy. And I said, really? And he goes, oh, yeah.
Did that happen quite a bit? People come up
uh-huh,
to you and,
yeah,
and tell
yeah,
you stories about your father?
Yeah, yeah. Or, you know, or... just yeah just this kind of similar reaction. It's like, oh, you're William Jefferson, you know. And even in Mississippi, my brother and I stopped at this convenience store, and the white man that was running the store, we stopped to get directions to a relative's house, and he came up to the counter and he looked at us. He said, you're Jefferson's. Okay. So that respect, because they owned quite a bit of property in Hazelhurst. And so last summer we had, every 2 years we have a family reunion in different places. So last year was in Charlotte, North Carolina. And one of my cousins was there, and he was saying, oh yeah, he says, growing up, he said, all the mothers wanted their daughters, that they would tell their daughters, you need to marry a Jefferson so that you can get some of that property or some of that, you know. So a lot of it. And so Brakeman, who later came to Kingsville to work for Mississippi, who Hazelhurst, who knew my father's family, in fact, one of them was saying, he said, yeah, you know, my family, we, my father's family grew up on the same plantation, so I need to look more into that. Yeah.
Did your father had like any hobbies, or did he like to play any kind of sports? Did he have any interests?
Not in sports, but when he retired, he started a garden out back alongside the garage, and he grew sugarcane.
No kidding.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so he would take his pocket knife out and he'd cut up the sugarcane, and mm-hmm. he'd have, with, you know, all of us, me growing up, and then when they were growing up, mm-hmm. he would, you know, call them over and he'd peel off the thing and cut up all the sugarcane so you could see, you know, sugarcane pieces spit out everywhere.
I remember the sugarcane and the grapes and the oranges and the,
oh yeah,
pomegranates.
Yeah, fig trees, peach trees, mm-hmm. orange, lemon trees, grapefruit trees. Mm-hmm.
How much land did you have?
We, right now we have 7 lots.
Okay.
Yeah, we have about 7 lots now. So there's only 2 on that block that we don't own.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. But he, there was an incident that happened. My brothers were 8 and 9 years older than me, so they were teenagers when I was pretty much growing up. Mm-hmm. And my father was very particular. Well, he collected mineral stones,
okay,
that he would find along the railroad tracks,
sure.
Quartz. And I don't know, and he put them in his windowsill in his bedroom. I don't know if you remember. And we could not touch it because he could tell if anybody moved.
Okay.
Yeah, and he would get real upset. And he collected pens, writing pens, on top of his dresser. And that was the same thing, you know. You could ask to borrow the pen, but you couldn't take it without his permission. And he was gone a lot, you know. He was traveling a lot, working and with the union. And so one of my brothers took one of the pens, and I think he lost.
Uh-oh.
And you know, he took it to school. So, yeah, and what happened, it was her father, James, who had taken the pen, but he blamed it on his older brother, Sonny. And so my father was, you know, upset and angry with Sonny and punishing him. And then it turned out, and then James fessed up and said, you know,
Sonny didn't tell his brother, huh?
No.
No kidding.
Yeah. And so James, you know, said, no, you know, it was me, you know. So then that made him really angry. And so James got really scared, and he ran down to another block, to my mother's sister's house. And he called the sheriff, Scarborough, who were like, in Texas, they're like, you know, generations of sheriffs.
Okay.
Yeah, and their reputation, Scarboroughs. So the sheriff pulls up, and my father walks onto the porch with a rifle. And he says, you're trespassing, get back in your vehicle and leave. And he was like, Mr. Jefferson, your son called. He said, you're trespassing. Get back in your car and leave. And I was like, holy crap. Not even the sheriff can save us. I mean, it was that kind of...
My goodness.
Yes.
My goodness.
It's kind of chilling, though, because, you know, it was like, well...
But you have no protection.
No.
Yeah.
My goodness.
Yeah.
My goodness.
But that showed you, I mean, so he was the right person to... intercede, yeah, for these guys,
right,
with the union.
Yeah.
Because he didn't back down on them.
If I was in a union, I'd want him to be my leader, without a doubt.
Yeah.
without a doubt. My God.
Yeah. And my brother Sonny, there's only two of us left now.
Yeah.
Me and my brother Sonny lives in San Antonio. And I just assumed that, because that happened years ago, and I just assumed, you know, it made an impression on me, but him being a guy and everything, I just thought, oh, he's forgotten about it. And he says, I will always remember that day. Yeah, I will always remember that day. But then he was, you know, he was very kind too, because we lived a block from the railroad yard. And so the hobos,
yeah,
would travel off the train, and they would come through the neighborhood looking for water and food.
Sure.
And I would, there were a few times that we were in the car, like if he was off on a weekend, and if there was like a circus in Alice or whatever, he would say, let's go to Alice and to the circus, you know, so we'd get in the car and take off, or go to Corpus Christi to the Tea Heads and take a boat ride, or feed the seagulls, or okay. He was always doing, running little trips like that, or you know, giving us blankets if it was really cold outside, and we'd be in the car, and he would just take us out in the country, you know, just drive around the Falfurrias or wherever, you know, just to ride and point out the cows and the horses. Mm-hmm. What kind of sound do they make?
I remember the cow and the horses, yeah, rides.
But he would, and my mother would see, as we were pulling away from the house a few times, you know, a hobo would come to the house looking for something to eat, and they'd, sure, stop the car on the street and go and, you know, feed them. Or
so he had a job the entire time through the Depression and things like that. Wow. Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. When did he die?
He died March of 1980.
Mm-hmm. So he was
80 years old.
80 years old.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What did he die of?
He had a heart attack.
Uh-huh.
And at the time, I had been working at Baylor College of Medicine in Houston, and my former boss was a heart surgeon, Dr. DeBakey's heart team, and I went to him and I said, what would have made his heart just stop like that? And he says, it sounds like it was just tired of beating. It just stopped, yeah. So he died he died 6 months from my mother, and he died on their wedding anniversary.
No kidding.
Yeah, they would have been married 53 years.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, and for the first time, like growing up, because he was away so much, you know, he never really was there for, you know, celebrate birthdays with us or anything like that. My mother would take care of that. And after my mother died, the sister that was 5 years older than me was special needs. And so I moved from Houston to move back home with him to help him with my sister. And I had a temporary job at the Naval Air Station, mm-hmm, at the personnel office. And so February, her birthday is February 21st, and mine was leap year day. And then when it wasn't leap year, usually the 28th of February.
28th, okay. Yeah.
And as I got older, I celebrate 28th and the 1st of March. So I came home from work and I thought, oh gosh, it's her birthday, and I need to run by the store and pick her up a birthday cake. And so I said, okay, so let me go home first. And I got home, and my father was just beaming, a smile on his face. And he said, look, he said, I remembered it's her birthday, and I got a cake. And I thought, wow, that's really great, Dad. You know, it's really great. So the next week was my birthday, and I came home, and it was the same. He was just beaming. He was so proud of himself. He said, I remember it. It's your birthday. And I said, I got your cake. And I thought, oh, great. And then the next week, he died.
Okay.
Yeah. He died the next week.
Is there anything else you wanted to add? Or something we haven't covered?
No, I think I'm feeling right now sad that I didn't look more into the union activities or anything, but I guess it's not too late. I mean, I'm sure that, you know, the Union Pacific or whoever took over MOPAC, Missouri Pacific, still has records of all of that.
There's supposed to be a place in Houston that has the majority of it. I can get the, I don't, off the top of my head, I don't know, but.
Because that would be interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we just have, I think we have two or three boxes.
Oh, okay.
I can bring it out later if you have time, and you can look at what we have.
I do know that wherever we traveled, my mother and my sister and I, we were little. No matter where we traveled to on the train, I remember there was always a brakeman there.
Mm-hmm.
To pick us up and take us wherever we needed to go.
Okay.
And when Rhonda was mentioning, you know, this and the display and everything, and I started thinking about it, and I thought, you know, I'm sure he probably made those arrangements.
I'm sure he did.
Uh-huh. For us. But, you know, I mean, that's hitting me now. You know, I never figured that out earlier on.
No, I've noticed with some people that's passed, you start to love them more after they've already...
Yeah, right. After all these already, things come out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really amazing.
Yeah.
I'm kind of ignorant about the railroad. What does a brakeman do? I assume that he breaks something, but what does it actually do?
I just remember him talking about, you know, letting the engineer know when to break and separate cars, or to add on cars, or to switch tracks. And I remember there was a wooden shack next to the train tracks. On if you cross the tracks at Wesash going towards 6th Street,
mm-hmm.
It was a little wooden shack that the black brakeman had, where lockers where they could. He would sometimes, my mother would drive in to work, and I would go with her, and so he would, you know, come with daddy, you know, and put up my lunch in my locker, and if he had cans of juice in there, he would give me, you know, here, why don't you take this, and then he'd take me to the caboose so I could see what the caboose was like, and then he'd take me to the engine, and I'd sit up, and I remember saying, oh, this is what I want to be, Dad. I want to be an engineer. And he said, oh, no, baby, there are no women engineers. And I thought, boy, he'd get a kick out of that, knowing that now there are.
Yeah.
Yeah. But he had a gentle side, you know, but he was just very... he had a presence, you know, he was very kind of imposing kind of guy. If you walked in, you took notice of him.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. So.
Well, thank you so much, Candace and Rhonda. Thank you so much. And we'll conclude the interview.
Okay.